Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
Joining us, someone who's been with us on many occasions prior, and we've had very, very spirited discussions with her. Our listeners love to hear what she has to say, and I'm positive that this morning is going to be no different. Let's welcome to our program once again, former Finance Minister Karen Nunes Tshera. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Satish. Good morning to your listeners and your viewers. Always happy to be here. I just heard the tail end of that conversation, and it does, in a sense, have some impact on what we are going to be talking about, which is economics, but affects that.
I think we should start there. I mean, I know we're here to talk about the budget review, but we can't get away from it. We can't. Let me ask you this question. As a former finance minister, you would have been able to understand all the challenges that an economy faces and the bad and the good and everything else. And we've been having a discussion about crime. Crime obviously must have had or does have and will continue to have an impact on economics in the country. We hear about persons not wanting to come in and invest. We hear about business people leaving the country and businesses now incurring greater costs as a result of crime. What's your take on it? I mean, this morning we have this huge conference treating crime as a public health issue. As a former finance minister, I don't want to drag you too much into it, but I think it'd be remiss of me not to get a comment from you on what's going on. Our crime situation, how it's being handled, treating crime as a public health issue, the impact on the economy.
I laugh because treating crime as a sort of a health issue seems to be replicating what the United States has now taken up for the last few years when the meth and the heroin and the different types of in pill form was being affecting, let me be frank, the white Midwest community. Prior to that, that type of crime, drug-related crime, was treated as persons who were thugs, three strikes and you're out, and all that goes with it. But then there's a sudden change in the approach. So we are mirroring what the Americans are doing as a healthcare crisis, which is just so amusing to me because it clearly shows, I don't think they haven't got the answer. They do have the answer, but will they committed? And just to say on that, one of the things that is one of these solutions, and in fact, Barbados has the impact, Interpol impact based in the garrison in Barbados. And they have been extraordinary. They work with the U.S. Foreign, their drug administration. They work with the U.K., etc. And they've been extraordinarily successful. They had a operation called Trigger 7 in September last year, and they got 10,000 tons of cocaine. More recently, in Barbuda, in Jamaica, in January, they were able to intercept. When I say they, well, it would be the Jamaican police intercepting, but the intelligence, I think, would have come from that source. 500 kilograms of cocaine that was going to be shipped out to Canada. So to answer your question, when Mr. Pandey put forward, and I'm not a PNN, I am not a UNC, I am not someone like Mr. Pandey when he beat that error. I am a PNN member still at this point in time, but the shipwriters agreement was the answer for Trinidad and Tobago. And I think what Barbados is doing with the Interpol impact, having them centered in Barbados, they're having a lot of success. And I think that the only way we can get rid of the kind of crime we have in this country with the guns, it reminds me of Rwanda, actually, the number of guns that are coming into this country, unlicensed and unregulated, and the number of unregulated Venezuelans who are every week being involved in crime, of a certain type of crime, and police being involved in crime, involved with money laundering, with the casino gambling. It seems to me that the only answer at this point in time is intervention from outside. That's the only way that we're going to solve the crime. And it's called disrupting the crime, not going after the drug lords, because finally on that, as we know, That is not going to, it's just a waste of time. We're going to be caught up in the court system for another 20 years. They'll probably be dead by the time you ever even reach a conviction that sticks. And so the best way to deal with it is to disrupt the flow of drugs through Trinidad, and that these who have the drugs, Venezuela and Colombia, find another route, because it's making it difficult to do business in Trinidad.
We've heard from numerous criminologists that we've spoken to in the program that there is a, for want of a different term, a criminal economy, a crime economy. And black market is something different from this. A crime economy that props up our economy, or that our economy depends on to actually survive. Is in your term as finance minister and in your readings and everything else, how much of that is true?
Yes, there is truth in, and there is truth in that. I mean, when they had the global financial crisis, the banks were able to be saved, so to speak, because the liquidity that they had really came from those kinds of sources. But what so there is truth that a lot of the businesses, which I'm not going to name any of them, obviously employ a lot of people informally as well as on the face of it. So there would be a great disruption in the economy in the first instance. But what the government needs to do, and what has not been done, and which encourages that way of thinking, is that there has not been any real effort to create opportunities for the micro, the Chowkin, to have independent businesses in which can help to grow the economy. I happened to have looked in on a show on one of these foreign stations, Al Jazeera, was being filmed in England, and they were talking on the issue of the economy. And it's not a problem of Trinidad alone. What they said is that the research has shown that 65% of the wealth is being held by 1%. And that when you see the COVID and everybody's suffering, yet you see this, the stock market doing extraordinarily well. And that is because the government, certainly our government, has not done anything to create other avenues of foreign exchange and to create opportunities in real to the TTME, speaking out about that. Matilda is happy to hear about that. But really making opportunities for persons to own their own business so that the allure of crime, because that's what happens. If you are working for CPEP or you are people which are part-time and can't, they're not living wage salaries, clearly you have to supplement your salary somehow. And if you're not given options, real options, to build your own business, everybody business starts from scratch. All the wealthy businessmen, Arthur Lockjacks, all of them who have done extraordinarily well, they didn't start with wealth, they started from the bottom. And you give them the real opportunities, one, by the VAT returns, focusing on persons who would qualify, who are in the micro business, because to be micro business, you're making up to $5 million annually. So I know you qualify for VAT returns. So start with them, start with training and so on. So what you've got to do at the same time as you close down the crime, the criminal thing, which is burgeoning, if it's the correct pronunciation, both of the money laundering and the drug transshipment. If you do not do that, we're seeing what we're seeing today, and we're already paying a price. And we have to make an omelet, you've got to break an egg. So does it mean that there will be a time that we are going to have a difficult period? Yes, we're going to have a difficult period, but what we do at the same time is create opportunities for making. We do have a strong foreign exchange, strong enough foreign exchange reserve, and strong enough HSF. And with all this reparation talks that's going on and all of these international organizations feeling guilt or whatever you want to call it, willing to help out, I do think that there's a chance. And just in the last point on that, don't think that we can't do it. In preparation for the show, I looked at what was the growth in countries in the Caribbean, who in 2021 were in these fiscal deficits, huge fiscal deficits, except of course Ghana, which is an outlier. And in every single one of them, yes, they hate us to talk about Barbados, but Barbados from 2021 to 2022, they had grown to 9.4%, the Eastern Caribbean about 5.4%, Jamaica 4.4%, from a negative position the year before. So they don't have oil and gas. They depend on tourism. And we need to develop other avenues, including that, which we could talk about at another time. So yes, there's a price to be paid, but we just cannot continue like that.
Of course, we are speaking with former Finance Minister Karen Nunes Teixeira. We need to take a couple of quick messages. When we get back, we'll actually focus on the topic that you're here to talk about, which is the year in review, and we'll probably take some calls as well. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. Our special guest this morning, former Finance Minister Karen Nunes Teixeira. And of course, we're starting our media review series with her this morning. It's going to be a couple of these discussions that we'll have. We know that our finance minister pulls out of the back pocket the date as to exactly when the media is going to be. It's usually at the end of April, beginning of May. Our finance minister, Colin Mbed, he's been boasting that the last financial year did exceptionally well, that we did not only have a balanced budget, we actually made a profit of $1 billion or something like that. And he has given the impression that, well, this year is going to be probably the same. Since his presentation last September to now, a lot has changed. I'm not too sure if we can realize the same thing that we did prior. What should we as citizens be looking out for in this media review?
Before I directly comment on that, I do think this is something that I feel that the public needs to understand, and it is a relation to one of the things that the Minister of Finance would have spoken about, and in a positive sense, using CSO figures, which is the unemployment rate of 4.7%. Just let me just say this before I do answer your question, because I think it's important for people to understand. When you are given the unemployment rate, and I ran the CSO to confirm what I had read on the CSO, I ran them to make sure I had not gotten it wrong. So what you have to look at first is the labor participation rate. In Trinidad, it used to be on the averaging 60-something%. And that is about what it is globally. And some of the so-called more developed countries is 80-something%. What does that mean? It means people who are not disabled, under the age of 15, retired students would not be included in the labor parties because they can't participate. But when you have of those that can participate a number as low as 54%, what it is telling you of all the persons that could participate and qualify to participate in the labor market, only 54.1% of them are doing that. And by the way, it doesn't mean that they have jobs. It means that they either have jobs or are seeking jobs within a time. So of that 54%, you can cut it down by a few percent, maybe to 40-something%. Now, it is that 40-something% that they use to determine the unemployment rate. So they determine out of that 40-something% of labor participation of 100%, only 40-something%, they work out from that what is the unemployment rate. So therefore, and in that figure is included part-time workers, CPAP, URP, people who do not work for a living wage. So when you lay a 4.7% unemployment rate, you must understand it, the starting point of working that out is the labor participation rate. And there are many reasons for that. So one last thing I would say on that, when you have a high labor participation rate and a low unemployment rate, you know that your economy is doing well. When your labor participation rates, as it is in Trinidad, has dropped again, you're looking at an unemployment rate of 4.7. It's, well, I'm saying misleading, but I mean, if you go on CSO, they will explain it, but no one explains it to people. So that's how they get to that figure. It's very, it's skewed. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing about statistics. But coming to your question, which is why I am here, Media reviews are really the opportunity for the government, having read the national budget either in September, October for the latest, but I believe it was September, and making appropriations to different ministries, judiciary, THE and other organizations which qualify, appropriating money out of the consolidated fund in order to fund those various ministries for the fiscal, the new fiscal year. And that fiscal year will start from the time of the budget till the next year, which is this year in September, I imagine. And the budget is based, as we all know, on what the government anticipates its revenue will be, and they use energy. So the government used the energy price of $92, I think, for oil, and for natural gas, I think, $6 or $6.50. But in any event, when it came to the oil, it was clear that from the middle of July that the price of oil was slipping down. It was going in a downward trend, and it has continued, but it has stayed fairly high at about $80. Certainly nothing near to the $92. So automatically, you know, we are not really a producer of oil and importing oil, and the oil is heavily subsidized. So we know immediately from that that the outcome is not going to be good. It even becomes worse when we're dealing with natural gas, because natural gas is really where the energy production, our revenue comes from. The Prime Minister and the Minister have indicated that things are not going to be as rosy this year. And they're right, because one, we have half of the production that we had just a few years ago is down to 2 point something billion trillion, as opposed to 4.1 trillion. And there is the Atlantic LNG has had to give some people, send people home on a VSEP or on a temporary basis. Ammonia has slipped, it's a quarter of what it was, and that has a lot to do with the price of natural gas. If your contract was based on a much higher price than 225, which I'm sure it was, it's not making sense for them to produce ammonia when the global price of ammonia is, I mean, of natural gas is so low, of 2 something, 215, and it's remained there for you to try and produce ammonia, because I'm sure your natural gas price is much higher than that. The Dragon Field deal seems now to be very much on hold, with Maduro having to deal with his former Minister of Energy, who was selling oil to Syria and other countries in the Middle East, but not declaring them. And so the minister, the Maduro is saying he's going through every NDA that has been signed with that minister. And I think one of them, one of the last ones, was with our Minister of Energy. So that is a very pessimistic, but an, I think a realistic position, that we are going to have a huge fiscal deficit. And why I want to stress for your public is this. Oil is trending about 80, 85, 75, 85, and it's staying up there. Now, I have a feeling one of the reasons that the minister put the oil at 92.50 was because he didn't want to have to put anything into the HSF, because once you go 10% over your budgeted amount, any excess, according to HSF, every quarter you have to deposit into the HSF. So I think he put it at 92.50, thinking that he knew that oil wasn't going to reach, it was going downwards. This trend was there. I went and looked it up, and it has remained in a downward trend, stabilizing at about 75, 80. So he knows he has nothing to put in the HSF. But the real problem is this. We do not produce any oil of any significance. We produce now about 57,000 barrels per day, down from 59,000, I think, a year or 2 years ago, and down from the 114,000. But more importantly, we had a refinery, and we would import oil and refine it. Do you know that right now, oil is king? It's not only because OPEC has cut its production that we're seeing prices of oil going up, but it's also what they call 250 new refineries are being built as we speak. 9 of them, Iran is building them in Venezuela. You're getting them built in Lagos, I think, or Kenya. I don't want to get the country wrong. But everywhere, 215 new oil refineries. Does that tell you something? It takes billions of dollars to do that, and it takes years before it comes on stream. So it is clear to me that the OPEC is not a blip. The fact that you are getting that number of new refineries being built, and then more importantly for your viewers to understand, and listeners to understand, it's a movement called de-dollarization, which is to break the control and the dominance of the U.S. dollar, the petrodollar. And so the BRICS countries are coming together now to create their own currency with which they can trade. That is, big countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, these are big players, and South Africa joined. These are big players. Not only are they looking at creating their own currency, but they have agreed to trade, bilateral trade agreements, to pay in their own currency. And so now the yuan is dominating more than the U.S. dollar. So between the bilateral trade agreements between Russia and China, and Brazil, and a number of these so-called big power countries, they are now using as a trading currency, not the U.S. currency, but their own currency. On top of that, you have Southeastern Asian countries coming together to create their own version of the IMF, because you know that the IMF is for crisis borrowing when a country is in crisis and they have to abide by the conditionalities of the IMF. Mm-hmm. And what they are saying is this: the combination of all of what I've said, the de-dollarization, the bilateral trade, the creation of their own IMF, the building of 215 new oil refineries, and the BRICS countries coming together with their own currency. What is happening with America is that America, and they are admitting America, is losing some of its currency power. And in fact, what has been said is that their bond, the treasury bond, which was highly prized before. Many people, many countries are not buying their treasury bonds. And that is one of the reasons. It's not the only reason. The other reason is to control inflation. But the Fed in America is increasing the interest rate, hopefully to make the treasury bonds more attractive.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there because news is next. So we pick this back up because definitely this is something that's going to have, it's going to have an impact on us one way or the other. And
that's what I'm going to tell you how it will.
Definitely, our listeners need to hear that when we get back with our guest, former Finance Minister Karen Nunes Teixeira. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
4 minutes after 8, the final hour of our show here this morning. Remember, we are bringing you live coverage of the CARICOM Symposium from 9. With us, our special guest, former Finance Minister Karen Nunes Teixeira. She was about to tell us some of the very, very interesting things that are related to us with these international developments, BRICS, the energy industry, OPEC, and all of this thing with the U.S. dollar. You're about to bring it home and tell us about the relevance. Yeah. I think you should.
Mm-hmm. So to bring it home is this, that if we believe that, now I have no crystal ball, and so has the minister said, and I'm not pretending to have one, but all indications are is that the price of oil prices are here to stay. As part of the geopolitical fight. And so how does that mean for, what does that mean for Trinidad? Well, there were no takers for our refinery. Our production of oil is minimal, 57,000, and I think they raised the supplemental petroleum tax from $50 to $60 a barrel. We are importing our refined fuel, and as what we would have learned from an article, certainly it was published in the newspaper, the Paris really is not profitable without the subsidies, and the subsidies from Unipet and National Petroleum. In fact, he was saying that we were in a position where the creditors were not willing to hold off. And so what does that mean? Oil, it seems that oil is going to stay high. It means that we're going to have to import the oil and refined oil at a much higher price. and that is going to affect the subsidies. The government had said they were capping it at $1 billion. They went down to 1.6, so I expect on the expenditure side, the minister is going to have to implement the subsidy on the cap on the subsidy for energy, for oil refined oil products, because I do not see that there is going to be an immediate end to the high price of oil, and our position without a refinery is not a good one. So that is what I expect to see from him. The revenue is clearly not going to come out to be anything near to what he anticipated. And he did say in his budget speech and several times that the reason why we had such a good turnout, and he said that we didn't have a fiscal deficit. I'm not sure, you know, you get all the different points of view, but the IMF said it was 0.3 last year. But the point is, if it was just 0.3 and energy only was negative 2.5 for growth, for real GDP growth, we can anticipate that it was going to be a huge fiscal deficit because the revenue just is not there. And so that what are they going to do to control the expenditure side? And on the expenditure side, I anticipate that the, as I said, the subsidy on oil is going to have to be enforced. I also think that they're going to have to do it. Well, France is fighting it out. But definitely the issue with the NIS, I think he's going to raise the age in which you can qualify for NIS from 60 to maybe 62 in the first instance. Hopefully you bring in the self-employed. One of the things that was very successful in years gone by was when, without the TTRE, employing a number of persons to really go after the PAYE and the taxes. So I think he may push that more. I also think that when it comes to the Social Security grant, senior citizens grant, I suspect there's going to be a lowering of the amount from the 5,500, because if you're getting NIS of 3,000 and then when you reach 65, you're also getting 2,500, which comes up to 5,500 combined. I think that the grants and subsidies are a major expenditure that we, unfortunately, because of the revenue being so weak, the government is going to have to deal with that. And lastly, I think with regard to education, especially at tertiary level education, I think there's going to have to be greater rationalizing of the programs. In other words, we've got to put the money into programs that are going to help the economic development of the country. And that brings me to my last point, is that as much as the government keeps saying and admitting, which is quite amazing, that its position with regard to last year, what had nothing to do with growth in terms of developing new products and new lines of foreign exchange, because our foreign exchange has remained at about 6.8 billion and propped up by HSF. Withdrawals, propped up by these special drawing rights, which all countries got, and propped up by bonds. We know that we are not making the money from exports to for foreign exchange reserves. So I think that the government has to, at this stage, start really looking at other of avenues of foreign exchange. And one of the things they need to look at is a food, because inflation is being driven by two things. More than anything else is food inflation. That's because we're importing 80% of our food. The flooding does not help. We saw the impact of flooding, and now the prices of those products are kind of receding. But the flooding, no question, we expect the flooding and nothing has been done. So I'm hoping that he's going to make an exception and put something into particularly to dealing with the flooding issue in agriculture. It's not the budget, so it's really about how the appropriation is going to be varied. And definitely we are looking at a fiscal deficit. We are not going to see any growth. And what has complicated it even more is because with the natural gas, yes, Colibri, Cassia and the Nouveau Zandoli have come on stream, But they're nowhere near to giving us the kind of production we need for LNG, as well as for the downstream industry, as well as electricity. And the Manatee project is a few years ahead. And I think the Dragon Field, with what's going on right now in Venezuela and the emphasis on oil now, I'm not too sure if that's given any sort of priority at all. So that the natural gas production, and now with the price and production being where it is, I mean, we're in a serious problem. And that brings me to the last point on that, with the solar panel project that Shell and BP got together in 2018, that was supposed to be used at least to substitute 20% of our electricity from solar energy. The reason that was finally given why it's only now starting is licensing. I mean, so as a result of which, the price at which they had quoted the government per cents, by the cents, I think it was 4 cents per kilowatt per hour, has gone up 61%. So it's even more expensive to produce electricity from solar energy than it is from natural gas, which we don't have. So it's not a good picture as far as I can see. And the minister will have to say, because the price of oil, what has happened with oil and the subsidies, he's going to talk about that. And he's going to have to talk about the natural gas price and production. And then the amazing part of it all is then if you know that, and you know that every year since you've been on making national budgets, I hope when you make your national budget this time that you will see the need to get into serious agro-industry, not the manufacturing, where even if they make the product here, all the raw material is imported, which is why we cannot devalue. You cannot devalue because the manufacturing sector, the day that we do not have US dollars to buy the raw material is the day that all of those, nearly all of those manufacturing, we so-called manufacturing in Trinidad is going to come to an end. So, and I don't know if people knew this, I didn't. Our refinery not only produced refined oil, jet, diesel, all of that, but they produce the bitumen, which is why the roads are being destroyed, because the bitumen they were importing was of a lower quality and could not stand up to the wear and tear on the roads. So they were producing the bitumen that they mix with the asphalt, that's gone. And something else that many people didn't know, I didn't know until someone in the industry told me, to make the plastic, like the plastic bags for the supermarkets and other products, the crunchy thing that you know that you use to wrap stuff so that it does bubble, it came from the byproduct from the oil, not the natural gas. So it wasn't just the refined fuels that we lost. We also lost the bitumen. We also lost the plastics that they were using from the refinery. And right now, 215 refineries are being built. Mm-hmm. And the gas production, even when the Manatee, which is supposed to be our savior, comes on stream, it will be a few years from now. And we're looking at the volatility. And I was told by Kevin Randall, right? I asked him on another show. I said, well, if Manatee can be a savior, so then we shouldn't be worrying about that Dragon Field, because it might take us long to get both of them on stream. He said, Manatee will not give us the kind of production we will need to continue with the energy and the energy economy. So the outlook, as I said, is a huge fiscal deficit. It will be blamed on the price of oil and production of oil, and also mainly natural gas. No production, and the price is sliding. And we are definitely going to see, I believe, that they're going to have to implement the subsidy on the natural, energy. I think they're going to have to do it. And they're not going to touch the property tax. So that's a bit too much to try to bite off at this. You might really get people marching in the streets with that. And with electricity, I suspect the prices are going to go up, but they're going to make, for those who work for less than X amount, to make some sort of subsidy for them. but electricity, the way things are going, BP and Shell are not going to put that kind of money into a project for which they had no, according to the newspapers, they had no control. It was the licensing by the government that kept it back from starting. They are not going to put that kind of money into a project and not expect some return from it. So I think we're going to see electricity prices are going to go up. And so that is my outlook for Trinidad and Tobago for the mid-year review, which is not the budget. So he's not going to talk about all the wonderful things the government has never implemented, which is a major problem, lack of implementation, and which is crime, another talk shop to me. And then bringing in other CARICOM countries, like if they have anything like the crime problem we have, like bring them in. So it will look as though it's a CARICOM problem. Yes, they may have a problem. They have nothing near to us. And that figure, the last figure I saw was that last year when the crime rate was the highest it had ever been, crossing 600 and something, the highest it had ever been. At the time when I read it, which was about a week ago, it was 129 at that same time last year. And it was 140 this year. So bringing in all these countries to have a talk fest and to pretend as though you're doing something is, you know, I heard on one of those shows that I was listening to, actually, he quoted it, actually, he said it came from Sigmund Freud. So he says, the definition of madness is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. You heard enough talk. It's time to let the U.S., the Shipwriters Agreement, let them come in, disrupt the trade, and start building out entrepreneurial opportunities, diversifying. And just on that, you know, someone who was defending the manufacturing sector to me was saying to me, but yes, Karen, they do produce a lot of those, well, I won't call the products, right? But they do bring in the raw things and they do make something. It's not just that they just canning. I said, yes, but the raw products they're bringing in, they have to import it, don't they? I said, it was like what happened with us. When they took our cocoa, we sent it to them and they gave it back to us as Cadbury chocolate, 100 times more than the cocoa they paid for. I said, we have products in this country where we don't have to import, that we can create a high niche Harrod type of product with our cocoa, because some Cocoa Bell, a company in Tobago, are producing high-end chocolate that goes to the high-end market, and you're not importing the cocoa. With steel pan, we don't have to import that. We can. There are people that can make a good living. I know people who make a good living out of producing steel pans and exporting it to countries like Norway and Sweden. So we can produce those things, those manufacturing products, without having to import the raw material. The Angostura, with someone in Trinidad is making a particular kind of organic sugar. Barbados is making sugar in St. John's for their oil, for their rum factory. We have a level of sophistication in making oil, products out of rum, rum-based products of all kinds, punch of all kinds, where we can grow sugar for that industry and not have to import it anymore. So there are things that we can do in import in the manufacturing sector where we can reduce the amount that we are spending in bringing in the raw materials so that we can actually produce foreign exchange, reduce our dependency on food imports, which are $5 billion a year, and stop allowing these franchises to pop up in this country, which use up our foreign exchange, have to import all of their products to meet the franchise requirements, pay the franchise holder in US dollars, and pay low-end jobs. Mm. It's time that we stop doing that. And that's my thing. But he's going to deal with the revenue and expenditure and how he intends to address it.
You've been very thorough.
The appropriation.
You've been very, very thorough. And I appreciate because the listeners needed to understand how not making the money that you thought you were going to make is going to impact on things that directly impact on their life, on their ability to spend, on the value of their dollar moving forward. And you were very, very thorough. We're coming close to the end of our interview, but I just wanted to get your comment. Aside and apart from the media review, recently we had the IMF making some pronouncements on our foreign exchange. And they were asking for a liberalization of the foreign exchange regime. And they were saying that it would make it easier for businesses to operate and pay for their whatever else. The finance minister, not necessarily shutting it down, but saying that, well, that can't work for us at this point in time. And respectfully, IMF, I appreciate your suggestion, but it's not the right fix for us. What's your opinion?
I agree with the minister because every year, so I understand, it's every IMF report, they always talk about devaluation, but you have to look at a country. What prevents us from being devaluing is exactly what I talked about. We get our foreign exchange from our energy products. And LNG is doing the best, and yet they're still having to send people home. So we have a huge recurrent expenditure, which is the subsidies I was talking about with the NIS. They need to bring in the self-employed onto the list. They did it in Barbados. We need to do it here. To devalue the dollar, it just pretends as though, makes it seem as though you may be bringing, well, you're bringing all the same salary, but its purchasing power has been further reduced because the major inflation that is all over the world, but we are facing, is food inflation. And much of it, they went from 8.03 to 8%, as if that is any big change from in months, not year on year, months. And so we can't afford to devalue because too much of what we're importing to so-called manufacture is imported, and therefore we will not become competitive. Because why countries devalue is to make their products more attractive, financial, less expensive on the world market, and therefore make countries want to buy your product. And that's not happening with the manufacturing sector. What we're making from oil and gas, as I already said, between price and production and the subsidies, it won't make any sense for us to do that.
Mm.
So I think I do agree with him on that point.
You're the second person to agree with him because we spoke to UE economist Valmiki, Dr. Valmiki Arjun. He had the very same opinion that he didn't think following the IMF's advice was the right approach at this point in time. This is where we're going to have to leave our interview for today. But I'm sure that once our Minister of Finance tells us exactly what he thinks, we would need to hear from you once again. So I'm booking you one time for that whenever it is in the future. Thank you so much for being with us here this morning and for sharing your insights on some of what is definitely coming our way as a result of what we're seeing in our economy. Always nice to have you once again.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be with you, Satish, and your listeners. And I hope that whatever I said this morning certainly said from wanting to be educate and enlighten, because knowledge is power.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you once again. That, of course, ladies and gentlemen, we drop the curtains on this interview with Karen Yunus Teixeira, our former Minister of Finance, starting our mid-year review series, where we look at some of the things that our finance minister has to grapple with, some of what has confronted us as a nation, and how we plan to deal with those moving forward.
Is streaming at freedom106.5.com.